For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Mike Calvin Show. It's 102.5 The Bone. A little cool in the gang for you. 727-579-1025. At Christmas time every year, when we take about 2 weeks off, when we come back, there'll be a couple of things that are popular this year. It was the Fyre Fest documentary that was on Netflix, and it was the R. Kelly documentary.
Right, yeah.
That was on TV, where we really got to see what that heart was like. And it was Abducted in Plain Sight, a documentary that I don't know, had I not been told by so many of the people to watch it, I would have watched it. I have children. I have extreme anxiety about seeing other children get abducted. I don't know, had I not heard from so many people how interesting it was, I would have watched it. And I'm so glad I did. The subject of that documentary, Jan Broberg, joins us right now. Jan, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Are you so surprised at the popularity and the success that the documentary has had? I mean, obviously, you've lived with this your whole life, but now it seems to be blowing up bigger than ever.
Yeah, I am a little surprised, but I think I'm also really happy that people are talking about this and that we're getting the message out, because I've been talking about my story for 20 years, you know, just small groups, big groups, whoever asked me to come and talk about it, so that parents and school teachers and whoever works with kids, has kids, can maybe see those subtle warning signs.
Let me ask you, if you don't mind, is that one of the biggest criticisms that I see that your family is getting, that you, I'm sure, have encountered before, is that some of the signs didn't seem so subtle, that there were seemed to the people outside of the world that you guys lived in, that they were more obvious signs. As an adult, do you look back that now with anger that your parents weren't more acutely aware of what was happening in your life?
You know, I really don't, because I think when you watch a documentary that takes a 7-year story and puts it in 90 minutes, it's out of context a lot of the time. So you don't see the 2.5 years of grooming that this man, you know, who was married, had 5 kids of his own. We met him at church, nicest guy in the neighborhood. Everybody loved him. You just don't see that grooming that happened, that trust that was built over those 2.5 years before he actually kidnapped me. Because, even the signs or the parts in the movie where you're like, what? How did this happen?
There's a lot of them.
You just don't put, yeah, there are. There's a lot of them. But you don't know the context. Like now you could ask me specifically questions and I could give you some context. I mean, I went through a period in my early 20s of being mad because I lost my childhood, and being upset and crying to my mom and yelling at both my parents. Why weren't you smarty? Why didn't you see? But then after that, I started studying what master manipulators and brainwashing was, and I could totally see it so easily, how my parents were groomed. And that's what pedophiles and master manipulators do. They don't just groom the child. They groom the entire family. And you don't know what's happening to you when it's happening to you. That's the scary part.
And I was trying to explain that a little bit this morning. There are some things that I saw as a parent myself, and I thought, well, now, of course, I would see that as a red flag in 2019. But even the FBI agent at the time in the documentary said he had never even heard the term pedophile before, and that this was something completely new to you guys. And this wasn't a new neighbor that just happened to move in. I mean, this was a guy who put the time in. It's very similar to what I think a cult is probably like, to where they get in there, win your trust, and then they brainwash you from the inside out.
Yeah, exactly. And in reality, that's the really key point that after being on the Dr. Phil show, we stood backstage and Dr. Phil said to me, he's like, this is the part people don't understand. Just don't pay attention to all the terribly mean comments to your parents. He's like, I see it so perfectly how this man groomed your family, your parents, and that's the missing conversation. That's why this story is so important. He said, because people don't realize it's happening to them now. Yeah. You know, so there were 800,000 reported cases of child sex abuse in the United States last year. So even in 2018, we're not that much smarter. I think if you saw it and you saw the red flag, you wouldn't allow your child to be sexually assaulted by somebody, but you don't.
Yeah, and so, the thing
and
is,
somebody you know.
We
it's
also
somebody you know and you trust and love.
And we also have something today that you didn't have, and that's the internet. And there are
the
ways,
internet, right.
And where it's happening, and we're one day we're going to look back and go, how do we not know they were sending them direct messages? This is Jan Broberg. She's the subject of Abducted in Plain Sight, which is something that we've watched, we've talked about. Let's start with the idea. This is something we talked about this morning on the show. Is what we want to talk about red flags. At what point I can defend a lot of things I think your parents did, but when they were letting him sleep in your room with you is where we have the biggest problem. Maybe you could shed some light on that.
And I want to put that in context.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really can. So you have to imagine the age of the child. Like I'm 10, 11 years old. I'm 11. I'm tiny. I'm a little tiny girl. I have a nephew that's 11. I still... it's my sister's son, and we both, you know, read stories. You know, sometimes I go over to my sister, we read stories, we lay by RJ, he's still scared of the dark. Okay, so first of all, you have to put the context of the child's age in there. Then you have to put in the fact that mom and dad took turns, tucked us in bed every single night, read a story, tickled back, you know, tucked us in, laid by us in bed. So when they say slept with me in my bed, first of all, he didn't get under the covers. I never remember him molesting me. The door was always open. He told my parents, his psychiatrist told him he needed to heal from his own childhood trauma, which he knew very little about at that time. I mean, he told him a few stories, but they didn't, you know, they didn't really know what the trauma was, except that he had been abused as a child. And the psychiatrist, the expert, the authority, had told him, I'm supposed to listen to these tapes and lay by a child. Would it be okay if I laid by Jan? And at this point, he's like my second dad.
Right.
I mean, the guy comes and takes us to school every morning with his own kids.
And they had no reason.
Every day.
They had no reason to believe that there might be any bad intention there. And they may have been a little naive
not
on top
even
of that.
One.
But don't you, as
sure,
the parents, say, why don't you lay by your own kid?
Well, maybe you do in 2018. Maybe you do. But for as close as they were, he didn't have his only girl child. He said he was trying to repair some things that happened with an aunt. And so he was supposed to lay by. Of course, his story is it has to be a girl. And it has to be about that same age as the aunt that abused me. And so there again, all of a sudden, he doesn't have that. He has four boys and a baby in arms, you know.
Yeah.
I think his wife divorced him because she knew it. Her little girl was turning 5 and 6, and she was going to be next, I think.
I know it's been some time, and you have been through therapy and all that, but now when you, I mean, obviously with the being on the talk show circuit and talking, is it hurtful every time you have to talk about this now, or are you enough to deal with it?
You know, like I said, I've been telling my story, you know, in big and small ways as much as I could over the last 20 years. So I think I'm pretty used to it. I don't think I was prepared because my parents are such great people, and I never would have survived had I not had the 12 childhood years that I had, which were ideal. They were perfect. I mean, I literally had a mom that was at home, and we ate dinner together around the dinner table every night with dad when he got home from work. And my dad was a very warm, you know, talkative, communicative man, and artistic, and played the piano. And we sing around, you know, my sisters and I sang around the piano with dad and playing the piano, mom on the guitar. So I just had a great childhood up to that point when I was kidnapped, and my whole life changed. But if I had not had that to go back to, I don't know if I would have survived. I don't know how kids who the abuser is their parents, how do they, you know, how do they survive that? For me, it was relatively, you know, true that honestly, that early childhood that I had was a huge key in my healing. And just like I said, there were a few years in my 20s when I was writing my life history and I was in college that I grieved, you know, the loss of my childhood and was angry with mom and dad, but it had nothing to do with the things that happened to me. They also were brainwashed, and the things that happened to them, you know, a master manipulator finds your one weakness or where he can get in there, and he's pulling the strings like a master puppeteer. It had nothing to do with me.
Can I throw a theory out there, and you'll have to tell me, you obviously know better than I do, but part of the reason that that this guy was able to manipulate your parents so much was he ended up getting close enough to them to have things that they could, this is for the people who didn't see it, where he could blackmail them. Mm-hmm. So he was able to manipulate them. He didn't. So, and we're talking about a time where it was not acceptable really to have affairs, and divorce was still looked down upon.
So he
manipulated.
And my parents were the farthest from that you could have been. They were very religious people. They believed in the Ten Commandments. That was not going to be something that otherwise would have happened with my parents.
So he had a romantic affair with your mother. And I think I think he found it easier to get to her because she, although you had a fairy tale type family, like a television type family, your mom was probably not getting the attention from your dad after those years of marriage. Mm-hmm. And he fed off that. He could tell that was obviously not what he got. Now, do we think that your dad was homosexual now that the situation's over? I mean, all we know about is that one incident. But your dad does seem effeminate, and in that time, obviously, homosexuality was also looked down, and he probably wanted a family. So is that the general belief in your family now that your dad was, in fact, a closeted homosexual?
My dad wasn't a homosexual. My dad was an artistic man. He was a florist. He fits the stereotype, if you want a stereotype, you know, gays and homosexual people. You could say he fit the stereotype, but my dad wasn't a homosexual. My dad was a little twin. He had an identical twin brother who looked and acted just like him, and they were best friends. My uncle was also married with 5 children, and neither one of them were closeted homosexuals, but they were hilarious. They were funny. They had their own language that we all laugh about today. My father just recently passed away, and I mean, we laughed more at his funeral than anything because they had a whole language that was like their own, and both of them played the piano. They played duets on the piano. My dad, like I said, he was a florist. He was a designer. He had those artistic qualities and stuff. So
he fit the
one masturbation thing, and that was it.
But you know, but I mean, there's now for those
but he
people
grew up with a toddler.
For those people who don't know, there was a scene. It's probably one of the most shocking scenes in the whole thing. I mean, the thing is about an abduction, but here's this religious man who was confronted by a man who he was friends with, and the man asked him to help him masturbate him, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't. And I, in my mind, and I don't know your dad, and I don't know the you know, all the details, you know, but I thought maybe it was easy to get him to do that because he and this guy who was the master manipulator saw this in your dad and saw his qualities as a flaw and used that as well. Like, you don't think your dad may have had a sexual feeling towards this guy?
Oh, he could have. I mean, but again, it's, I don't know. I don't know what your youth was like, but I had a best friend, you know, and she and I, we did some exploration.
Yeah.
His kids.
To me, but more for a man. And again, like I said, you know, I kind of think it's unfortunate that scene actually got put in the documentary. I guess there's some importance that people are aware that
let me interrupt you for a second because I don't think bad about your dad because of that. What I'm saying is that if your dad is not bisexual or homosexual or whatever, that is a very important scene because it'll show you how much this guy can manipulate people. If he can have a straight man perform a gay act just it shows you the power that this guy had over your family. I think it's a very important
story. Well, and that's more what I think it is. Yeah. So when, you know, because there was never anything else ever in his whole life with anybody ever else before, you know, while he was married in his late years as he's aging, and nothing. That was the only thing that ever happened. I believe the guy was a master manipulator, which is a really important part of the story. And so if you're getting that, then that makes me feel like, yeah, it was important to tell. If you just kind of pass it off like, oh, he was just closeted gay, and that was, you know, part of who he was, and so it wasn't that big of a stretch, then I think you do miss the point.
Yeah, no,
I was a master manipulator.
Yeah, I definitely see that as my theory when I was thinking was, if the guy, you know, part of him being so manipulative is he had to know the people that he was manipulating. And if he picked up, even if he saw some of the stereotypes in your dad and thought maybe he might be closeted, but then he used that against your dad, and then he used that to break in to your mother, and the guilt that they both felt and the shame that they both felt is a main reason of why I think he was able to do much after the abduction, why he was able to go back and still have access to you. And it's really, I tell you, for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's an amazing story that has a happy ending, because Jan is obviously alive and normal, and she's telling other people. But how do you feel about the way he died, that he didn't have a chance to be properly punished? I don't think.
Yeah, there were a lot of emotions that day when the district attorney called and said, you know, that he had killed himself and left these tiny little two-line suicide notes for his kids. I think he thought he was going to be found and revived, because he had tried suicide before throughout his life, and always, you know, because somebody was after him, and somebody, you know, it was just a sickening kind of feeling that I had of grief and of anger, like, you know, he never did. And I'm not the only little girl. There were three before me and four after me that we know of now.
Wow.
You know, have come to us.
Wow.
So, you know, you find out that, oh, he was already grooming another little girl as soon as I was brought home the second time after the second kidnapping. And he worked on that girl's mother for 2 or 3 years, who was a psychiatric nurse, and became her best friend, and then raped her little girl from age 9 until she was almost 18. And told somebody she was going to kill herself at school, and the mother dragged it out of her. It's the only time that he spent any time in jail. They prosecuted. He was convicted for rape of a child, and he spent 1 year in jail of a 10-year sentence, and then he was out again. And I know the two little girls that came after her.
Oh, did you?
I was in the 70s, and she was in the 80s, and these other two were in the 90s, and up until the day he killed himself. He was grooming and...
Did you have the opportunity?
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Did you have the opportunity to see or read anything about the R. Kelly documentary that was also on? Because I see a lot of similarities here. Here you got R. Kelly, who is using his fame to steal kids away from their parents and turn them against their own parents.
Yeah. Oh, I see a ton of similarities, and it, you know, it's so. I spoke at a, I don't know if you know what Operation Underground Railroad is. It's a organization that saves kids from sex trafficking around
right.
the world.
Right.
And I spoke. I was keynoting with them and with the Attorney General in the state. He was the second keynote, and he said, you know, we uncovered a case where one man came into our Attorney General's office and said, something's wrong with my 14-year-old boy. I don't know what. And I don't know who to go to or turn to, but these are the things I'm noticing about him. He rides his bike. He's sullen. His grades have gone from straight A's to C's and D's. There's something wrong. And they uncover a case where this kid and 9 other kids are riding their bikes to a home in the suburb, you know, middle America. And this man in this home is pimping these kids out for sex, people that are paying for sex with these young boys and girls in this man's home. It had been going on for 4 years, 32 kids involved. Mm-hmm. Not one other parent had noticed anything and said anything about their kid, because, you know, we just think, oh, maybe they're just starting to, you know, they're a tween,
puberty,
they're 11 or 12. And you just, you know, he was like, this man that walked into my office was an undocumented guy that thought I was going to deport him.
Yeah.
And he's like, where's all the other parents that speak perfect English? He's like, nobody's seen And if they do see something, they brush it aside or they sweep it under the rug. I mean, I had a girl come up to me and said, I tried to tell my mom about what was happening to me by her boyfriend. She slapped my face.
Wow.
So we don't talk about things like that.
Yeah, it's
and
hard.
So that's in 2019. That's not in the 70s. I'm saying, how do we see what's right there to see? This is what is so crucial. And yes, maybe looking back in hindsight, you can go, oh my gosh, those were huge red flags. Her parents really were so naive or dumb. They just didn't see them. But honestly, they're not, they don't happen like that. They happen so subtly over so much time. There's so much trust that is built with this, with the people that are manipulating you, that my parents would have literally signed paperwork to say, if we die, you guys raise our kids. That's how close they were. You have to imagine your best friend, your closest family member, and your favorite uncle, your favorite, you know, grandpa, who's a pillar in the community. Because I hear these stories. I hear them every day. And it's somebody that close that the child knows, loves, trusts, that you love, trust, and know. You just don't know it yet.
Well,
you will find out that somebody you know has been harmed by somebody you know.
Oh,
you will find that out.
Sure. Today. Unfortunately, it's way too rampant.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
I have two children. I have a 12-year-old and a 6-year-old, and my son at 12 is about done with me warning him to tell me if anybody touches his wiener, you better tell me. But that's how I am. I'd much rather overdo it than anything else. Listen, you've had a very interesting life, to say the least. You've had an amazing comeback. And now that they're talking about doing a movie, is that a done deal? They're going to make an actual feature film about it?
You know, it's not a done deal. There's just, you know, things that are swirling around and possibilities that that I'm, you know, looking at and stuff. So I'm not sure yet. There may be a TV series or a feature film. That's all possible.
I almost think a TV series might be better, because a TV series will give you a season or so to set up the manipulation before you can see the actual bad things that happen. And I think that would probably be interesting. Well, listen, I'm glad that
I think you're right, because that's what we got to understand, so that we as adults can make a difference in the life of our own children or others, that we can see it. Yeah. That would be good. I like that idea.
All right, let's go with that. Write that down. We're going to do that. Many people who've been through something like this are embarrassed. They don't want to talk about it, but the people who do are the ones who help other people. So thank you for doing that. And I'm glad that things are strong and that you're moving on and helping other people. And I certainly appreciate you coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. I, too, am very grateful that my parents stayed together, our family stayed intact, and we were able to get through this. And hopefully the message gets out there, the real message about perpetrators and manipulators. And thank you for helping me tell that.
Yeah, they're closer than you think. Thank you, Jan. Pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you, too.
Have a great day, Mike.
Bye. Bye-bye.
What a lovely lady.
Yeah, very nice, and seems very well-adjusted for all the trauma that she had to go through.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.